Congratulations! You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Jenny Ottinger.
Maysoon is sick again this week. Well, she's recuperating.
Oh,
she's
good.
It's not as dire as it was last week. I think she's doing a lot better, but needed a little more time off. So go ahead and keep writing in those get well wishes to congratulationspinetree@gmail.com. Okay, we got some listener feedback from our last episode, and this is from Kate. I'm not going to say the last name, or should I?
I don't know. Maybe not.
Okay.
I don't know.
Anyhow, number one, I would totally sell a painting to anybody evil, which is everybody, including us if you look very closely. Here's why. There's no such thing as clean money. It's our job to get that dirty money and launder it as best we can by doing something good with it, like living a good life and caring about other people.
Who does that?
But be careful, because if you think you're too good, you're just going to do boring do-gooder art for other people who want to claim goodness and refuse to realize that the feeling of wanting to do good often comes from the unconscious fear that we are bad. And if we don't deal with that fear that we are bad, then we will see badness only in other people like Dick Cheney and never actually be able to truly do good when we get his money. Two, about artists' ambition / need for approval. Just speaking for myself, I may have started out making art to fulfill unmet childhood needs, i.e. to get approval from, quote-unquote, the world. But this is not a sustainable motivation because there will never be enough approval. Okay, pause right there. That is the definition of sustainable.
She's
I'm sorry, this is a really good letter and very considerate.
Underestimating my dark hole, my deep need.
Well, the point is if you can never get enough,
right.
Then you'll always
That's the
can work toward
of it.
Okay, just kidding.
Right.
Sorry, disrespectful. If you live like this too long, the fear and emptiness will eventually kill your ability to be a truly creative individual who is someone who has nothing to gain and nothing to lose. I make art for lots of reasons, including the desire to know myself more deeply, see first paragraph, to connect with my intuition and senses in a world that distracts from these things, to play, to uproot cultural conditioning that limits my freedom, and probably more. But I think your question was, why do we want our art to be seen? I want my art to be seen because it's a basic human need to want to communicate with the tribe, especially if you are dissatisfied with the way the tribe is being run, or if you feel alone with your ideas and feelings and want to run them by other people in the tribe. Some people just have something to say, something to offer, and they know it. And it's not an ego thing. It's just like, hey, everybody, I had this feeling about us. What do you think? It's more of an offering than trying to get something. Okay, thanks for doing the podcast.
Yeah, I think that last part is definitely true as well.
That people just want to communicate.
Yeah, for sure.
Too. Okay.
Right?
I kind of forget what we said.
Well, you have a podcast, so I'm pretty sure you have a need to communicate.
Right. But last time we said that it's more like you want attention.
Yeah.
Not just that you have something
approval.
To say, but you want to be seen and acknowledged that
yes.
you are saying it.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was a great letter. Very considerate. Can't say I agree with the majority of what was said in it, but I think that that person is coming from a good place.
I think that I am not as insightful or self-aware or thoughtful.
I feel like I am insightful, so I know that I am petty and that I need attention. But I also agree that, like, I agree with what she was saying about feeling like if we are judging Dick Cheney and saying he is bad, I am not, and therefore I do not associate. That is a form of negation. Like, we're complicit. We elect these people. We pay our taxes to pay for the wars they create. Like, we're all guilty.
So you would sell work to him?
Well, no, that's the thing. I just don't think, just for me and my own personal little bullshit
right.
limitations of what would make me feel good, what would make me feel bad.
Right.
I don't think I could
sell art to Dick Cheney. Don't shop at Walgreens. I mean, oh my God. You have to edit that. I love Why? Walgreens.
Can I leave it in there?
Walmart.
Right.
You know.
Right. Yeah, well, plus, like, there's also the knowledge that I will never have to actually make this choice in real life.
And sell art to Charles Manson.
Right.
How do you come down on
Charles Manson, yes.
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Dick Cheney, no. Walgreens, maybe.
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Dead.
Is he dead?
They executed him, didn't they? Or he was killed in prison. He's definitely dead. Oh. You know, he lived in Ohio for a little while.
Well, I won't draw any conclusions from that.
Bath, Ohio. I don't even know where that is.
He seems a little more misguided than evil.
Jeffrey Dahmer?
Yeah.
Whoo! I think he's more evil than Charles Manson.
You do?
I don't know. Evil. This
he
is
didn't
the thing.
Recruit
this is what we're
evil.
To learn.
He didn't recruit evil minions. And it just seemed like he couldn't really help himself.
What?
Take this out, please. Please take this out. Every
Are you serious?
I say something that I think is perfectly reasonable. Your facial expression makes me retract.
I think that you haven't reread the Jeffrey Dahmer wiki page in quite some time.
That is true.
He's the one that drilled holes in people's heads and poured chemicals into their brain. Boiling water sometimes. Remember?
When you say it like that. But I'm thinking more of his...
Yeah. His art?
I guess I'm not going to defend Jeffrey Dahmer anymore.
Oh, that's okay. Well, he's dead. I don't know. But I think this is what we're supposed to learn from this email, is that we really can't be... Whenever, this is what they say, whenever you're pointing one finger at someone else, there's three fingers pointing right back at you.
That's right.
Well, what do you think that it's not true, that we are better than Dick Cheney?
I'm pretty sure.
But are we if we let him give us money?
Well, we gave him a lot of money, so maybe it's just returning money from whence it came.
In our, like, taxes and stuff?
Mm-hmm. And I donated to his campaign.
Shut the fuck up.
I'm just kidding.
Don't, that's not funny at all. Okay, we got a little bit more listener feedback. This one's from Matt. I was interested in the whole aspect of artists doing things just for recognition or a pat on the head. Like, I thought Jeff Koons was quoted about just doing art for the money. I could be making that up, but it sounds good. Also, from a non-artist perspective, I figure that most people have that need for approval from peers or boss/paternal figures. Like, I just got done doing a 2-month stint at Starbucks, right? I hated it and everything about it except for a few people I worked with. My last shift was with one of these people, and as we parted ways, she told me I could come back and work with her whenever. I thought that was cool and a feel-good moment. But it was at Starbucks, which I feel is a gross homogenization of culture. Kind of long rant about something that might have gone off topic, but at the heart of what I was trying to get at was just this feeling that even though I hated the job and the feeling like I was giving everyone diabetes, that pat on the head helped me leave without such a bitter taste in my mouth.
Yeah. Everybody needs approval, right?
It's only human.
Or we wouldn't have dogs, right?
Right.
We'd have cats.
Think if we returned,
everybody would have a pet cat.
And no dogs. Because the dog gives you more sense of, like, self-importance.
Yep.
I agree with that. Okay, we're here in, once again, an artist studio, which is rare considering this is an art-related podcast, but this might be only the fourth or fifth one we've been in. And we are in Bayview, neighborhood of San Francisco, California, talking to Genevieve Quick, artist, art writer, time traveler. Anything else we should add to that list?
No.
So I just want to kick it off. Let's address the elephant in the room. You are from Michigan.
Yes, I am.
And I'm from Ohio, and that makes us mortal enemies.
Yes.
Do you feel the palpable tension between us because of that?
I do. Yes, I do.
As you know, there was a war between Ohio and Michigan.
You know, I didn't know that until I heard it on your podcast.
Yep, there sure was. Yeah. And guess who won?
Ohio?
That's right. So anyhow, I thought maybe since we're in your studio, you could chit-chat with us a little bit about some of your artwork. Well, it looks like you're working on making a diving suit or an astronaut suit or who knows.
It's two sets. It's two helmet sets. One is sort of a narwhal and the other one is a unicorn. And so they're helmets and then they have these telescoping elements in the front. And there's cameras that will be inside of them, and there'll be a video, and then the sculptures also.
A video that the viewer sees of these being enacted, or?
Yeah. It's going to actually be almost more of a narrative video. So I'm going to shoot it in the mountains, and then I'm going to shoot it part in the at the shore. And so it's going to be these, they're almost like characters. And they're sort of going their different ways, the routes up and down. And then, you know, they see and then they, I don't know, what else?
What is that material, styrene?
Yeah, styrene is a white plastic that they use for architectural models. So it's just a thin plastic. So in the past, I've used paper and foam core as materials that sort of speak to the design or the architectural model language. And I'm continuing with that with the plastic because I want the objects to be almost speculative. And, you know, if I made them out of wood or metal, they would be too real and too specific, I think, or almost toy-like, too. And I want them to be more abstract and more like suggestions.
So as part of, it seems a lot of your work has to do with like traveling and like adapting to different environments and things like that.
Well, yeah, I'm interested in vision as sort of an idea of remote vision, I guess. And so seeing things that aren't directly in front of us. And so like the camera allows us to take a picture even though we're not there. You know, and it's sort of, it's a relic, I guess, you know, but, you know, thinking about that in terms of like space and like, you know, we never actually go to space, at least I haven't. And so, but we have this distant view of space, even though we've never been there. Same thing with the deep sea. So I'm interested in this parallel right now between deep sea and space as these inhospitable places that we can only see through technology, basically. Because most of us will never go there.
Remember how if you move close to the speed of light, if you move at a speed close to the speed of light, you're supposed to age slower? Like if you go out, remember in Cosmos with Carl Sagan?
Yeah.
And so if you travel at a speed that's almost the speed of light and you go out to some distant galaxy and come back to Earth, it will feel to you like it was a very short amount of time. But when you get back to Earth, everyone you know and love will be dead because so much time will have passed on Earth. How is that true? I don't believe it.
I don't know. I'm just an artist. I'm not an astrophysicist.
I'm just very interested in time travel. Mm-hmm. You did, you were in Christine Wong Yap's activity mm-hmm. project, and one of your things was looking into the past. Mm-hmm. What's up with that? Does it not boggle your mind?
Yeah. You know, one of the things I love to do is, if I'm in the desert, and, you know, you can see all the stratification within the geography because of the way that either it was flooded at one point and then the waters receded, or the way that it's, like, pushed upward from the tectonic plates. And you can see all the layers, you know, and so you can see sort of a history about, like, what the landscape was at one point, you know. There's a chronology to it that I find really interesting.
Millions of years.
Yeah.
Does it not make you feel insignificant?
Yes, a lot of things do.
And how do you persevere as an artist in the face of that?
You just gotta carve out your own little block of the world and make the most of it.
That's a very positive attitude.
It's really uplifting.
Also, you're a writer. We were talking in our last episode about getting negative reviews as an artist, and we were wondering what it's like to write them. And we decided that you have to be brave to do that. What do you think?
I do write negative reviews. I never set out to write a negative review. I think it's really important to go to see all the shows that you see with an open mind. But I do think that my job as a writer is to respond honestly to the work. And it does make me uncomfortable, but I think that some of this needs to be discussed. And, you know, I think that the other thing is that you need to take things beyond the gut reaction. You know, you go to see a show and you think, oh, I don't like this at all. But then you need to break it down and try and understand what it is that you do not like and what it is that isn't working. And the writing process really helps me with that. And I hope to do that in my reviews, you know, rather than just saying, oh, this is horrible. You know, you need to really respect the artist, even if you are giving them a negative review. And you need to take their practice seriously and not just dismiss it, you know, and be earnest with it.
How do you kind of get a foothold with work that maybe you initially just don't have any interest in? Or like have, there's so much work that I see and then I'm just like, there's no response. Like it's not firing off anything in my brain. Do you ever, I mean, would you just not write a review then? Or,
you know, I don't write reviews of every show I see. You know, sometimes I select things judiciously. And sometimes I go out there and I just sort of feel like I have to respond to whatever it is, you know. But, you know, I mean, I think the thing is that sometimes you need to do some research and you need to think about the artist's practice in a longer scope. You know, you need to think, you need to go to their website, you know, or the gallery's website and look and see what they've done in the past, you know, and think about how this show possibly is informed or diverges from their previous work. When work doesn't strike me, sometimes it's a matter of my lack of knowledge, you know, really.
I think that's what is so interesting about your reviews and your art is how much research you do. Why do you like research so much?
Oh, because I'm a nerd. You know, especially with the writing, you know, I think it's really important to do your research, to be informed. You know, and it's a really great opportunity for me to learn things. You know, there's so much that I have to learn just to be able to speak knowledgeably about it, you know, when I'm writing. And in terms of my own artwork, I tend to like to look at a lot of different things and try to confuse my brain a little bit, because I think I tend to be a kind of a linear thinker. And I think that the more things I'm looking at, the more sort of weird connections get created, you know.
Maybe writers are quiet people.
Yeah, we are. We are much quieter people. We're solitary too.
Quieter and more solitary than artists? That seems possible.
Yeah. Because at least when you're an artist, you have openings and like, there's no opening for your article.
You stand in the corner and don't talk to anybody, right? Yeah. And eat crackers, right?
If you're an artist.
Isn't that what you do?
You don't do that.
I don't, because I'm loud and obnoxious and talk a lot.
And same.
I usually drink heavily before openings.
I don't know. I feel like I'm still working out art, like what art writers are like.
Or just like you. Oh, not just like you.
Only
harder. Yeah. It's really intense, the smartness.
I know.
It makes me feel silly as an artist.
Why?
To have somebody pay attention to my work that is, like, super smart.
No, you're smart, too. I feel like when I read your view, I'm like, oh, my God, that's so much better than what I thought it was about.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, a good review or a good article should illuminate things to you that you didn't know before, you know?
I think so, too, because that's the job. That's, each other has their role.
Sometimes I feel like I'm just speaking for myself. That it's like the writer brings so much more to the table than the artist is giving.
You know? I mean, sometimes there are flat reviews and the artwork is much stronger than the written word. You know, it's especially true with performance or time-based media. It's really hard to give those those texts' life. If you have the opportunity, Cynthia Carr's On Edge is a really, really great book about performance in the East Village in the 80s. And it's very much like very boots on the ground, sort of like in the moment sort of writing. It's really nice.
Do you have other people we should check out?
I really like Christopher Knight's writing, Helen Carter's writing, Berta Smith, Wayne Kastenbaum is wonderful. So many. There's really so many.
What are some of the things that you read about writing or about art?
Right now, I'm reading Gilda Williams' How to Write About Contemporary Art. It's very good. It's especially good for students. And I'm really enjoying that right now.
What does she say?
You know, she's breaking it down into very simple sort of things about, like, you know, don't use, like, conflicting adjectives, you know. Like, don't say, like, grainy but smooth.
Oh, jeez.
which happens, you know, and yeah, it's good. It's really good.
Do you remember that article in Triple Canopy a couple of years ago about international art English?
She talks about that too. Yes.
Do you have some thoughts on that whole situation? Because your writing is very clear.
Oh, thank you.
I feel like you don't go into the danger zone.
I try to avoid it, you know. Yeah, I try to avoid it, partly to protect my own behind, just because I don't want to tread into territory that I'm not really comfortable with. Mm-hmm. You know, if you throw around that jargon, you know, you really, really have to know your stuff, you know, to get it right. And then, you know, I don't really want to alienate my reader.
I'm gonna post a link to that article. I loved that article when it came out.
Did you hear the symposium they did?
About that?
Yeah.
About it? No.
Yeah, you should listen to the Triple Canopy podcast. They did a panel discussion on it.
I'll link to that as well, dear listener. Do you have any shows that we should check out, listeners or me, Kate Rhodes?
The Thorsten Burns and Darren Martin at Crow's Work is really excellent.
They're having shows?
Yes. Then they're doing events, I think, 3 weekends coming up, so I would check it out. They had live performances on last Saturday's event, and they have their video projections going on too. That's part of Crow's Works residency program.
What's up with that?
Yeah, she's inviting people to come in for a month, I think, at a time, and they're doing projects. It's pretty fantastic.
And you get to go see it.
Yeah. So, also, Michael Arcega's show over at Johansson Projects, which is right next door, is really fantastic. Radical Presence at Yerba Buena Center for the Arts is also really fantastic.
Note to listeners, you should definitely go see that because I think we're going to talk about it in the next episode. Right. We were meaning to talk about it, but then Mae soon got sick, mm-hmm. and she fucking bought the fucking book.
Mm-hmm. It's very good. It's very good. And there's going to be Coco Fusco is going to do her Dr. Zayas lecture coming up. That's going to be really fantastic.
I had no idea. Thank you for telling me. Fuck yeah, Coco Fusco. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, do you have anything else that you would like listeners to know in general about art or life?
Just keep on plugging along.
Thank you so much for meeting with us today and letting us, two people of, you know, ill repute, come into your personal space of your studio. And as always,
congratulations.
Pine tree.
Hey everyone, this is Kate by myself, and I remembered as I'm now editing the podcast that we were supposed to do a ramble this week, and sure enough, we did not do that. So I just wanted to let you know that listener submitted a show that we definitely wanted to mention was Spin Tactics. Three artists repurpose vinyl records and perform with turntables to make moving images. And this is in the Peephole Cinema in San Francisco. And that is viewable 24/7 through a dime-sized peephole installed at 280 Orange Alley, which is 26th Street near Valencia. I'm going to be by there tomorrow. So go check that out. There are so many more shows that you need to see. Just wanted to be tried and true to our listeners. If any other listeners have a show they want us to mention for people to go to on our next ramble, maybe next time we'll do our August ramble. Just send it our way. Do you do studies for your paintings?
I just started to. It's funny you should ask.
Yeah.
Do you?
Never.
Really? Because why?
I do preliminary drawings.
Oh, you do?
But I don't usually do.
Like how big a drawing?
Like thumbnails or like a page.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to just do maybe a thumbnail, but I started.
A thumbnail, for listeners who don't know, is a very small drawing.
Like
the size of the nail.
Thumbnail's on a your bit thumb. Misleading. I'd say it's they're bigger than four that. Times the size of your thumbnail.
Or even six.
I recently started doing full oil paintings.
Yeah.
As a study.
And then what do you do with the studies?
I don't know. That's the first one that you're looking at right now.
Is that the only one?
Maybe. No, I bought canvas. I do some on canvas paper that are like all over the floor. I want to do an experiment to see which takes longer. Doing it on the same canvas and going around and around and around.
Yeah, because you have or some weird process, right? Where you before. Like, there's like some sweet spot you're trying to get to, and if you go too far, you
then
have
I
to start
all
over.
The way around again.
Yeah, that's funny and weird.
It
makes
weird.
Sense though, because if you're going for kind of a rough look, you
yes,
can't
and then
get
it gets
that back
too tight.
By working
exactly.
it more.
Exactly.
Yeah, that
that's
makes
exactly
sense.
What happens.
Yeah,
it'll get too tight, and then I have to go all the way around again.
Remember Mills?
I do remember Mills.
Did you have Hung a lot?
Yep.
Hung Lu.
She was on my committee.
Famous painter. She likes that. I would have paintings where she would come in and she'd be like, don't do anything. You're going to ruin it. And I'd be like, Hung, I literally just started this like 10 minutes ago.
That's funny.
And then and then she'd come back the next time and be like, you ruined it.
It's dead.
And I'd be like, it's going up on the fucking wall.
Wow.
No, I'd
and
never
then
say
what would
that.
She say?
She'd punch me right in the face.
She always does that.
So have you figured it out yet? You're still kind of
no,
working
I haven't.
On, because does
I
it take
only
longer
did this study.
To fuck it up and get mad and start over?
We'll have to see.
Or do an entire painting before.
This is what I think is going to happen. The study is going to be remarkably better than the actual final painting.
And then does the study become the finished work?
I mean, I guess. And then I'll have like a 5-foot study and a 1-foot painting.
Right. That's hilarious. Who's your favorite painter? Top five? My number one favorite is Antonio Lopez Garcia.
I think we just established earlier that we have opposite painting tastes.
So let's work it out. Okay, you got Antonio Lopez Garcia from Spain, still alive. Did a portrait of the Spanish royal family that took him like 20 years. Gwyn John.
Like bad form.
And he painted this picture of a dead baby. I think I talked about it a couple episodes ago. Anyhow, Gwyn John, turn of the century or something.
Oh.
She was a lady. Her brother was also a famous painter, Augustus John. And they painted the same woman who was like his mistress. But Gwyn's paintings of her were way better than his because all her paintings were. Thomas Eakins, who was a painter but also a misogynist. And he said no great surgery or sculpture would ever come from a woman, but it's still okay to teach them. Just because,
out of charity.
But everyone says he was gay. His paintings of his wife look like, make her look like a frumpy loser. And then he just paints like dudes' dicks and asses. Giacometti, more famous for his sculptures than his paintings, but I love his paintings.
I don't know his paintings. All yours are old. I'm going to think of more old people.
Oh, should I think of some more new people?
No, you don't have to.
I should think
to.
Of some more women.
Yeah, you really should.
I'm a bad person.
Wow, damn, you just...
Oh, fuck. Go for
I
it.
I just thought of somebody...
And you got to have a cute little something about them. A little tidbit.
Okay, do you know my favorite old painter? I have two favorite old painters.
Okay.
Whistler.
Of course.
And Goya.
Oh, hell yeah, Goya.
Who I thought of. Man, because, yeah, totally I got him. I got him. You. Oh, I thought you wished you that you picked him and I was
No, I think that was really happy. Right up your alley.
Well, I just thought of him because of the Spanish royal family. His awesome painting. You know,
no,
with them looking all crazy and oh yes,
I didn't know that.
I don't know how they felt about it. It seems they might have been a little. It's not flattering.
Well, why would you get Goya to do your fucking portrait if you wanted it to look like fucking angels from heaven?
I'm thinking they weren't the most attractive royal family. You know,
none of those with people all the were
inbreeding.
Right,
it took its toll, but. And oh, I said Whistler. And then I like Alice Neal and Joan Brown.
Oh, of course.
Right?
Oh, God, I'm the worst fucking... I have two ladies. I just put feminism back and, 30 years.
And here I go with a black guy just to make you feel like really bad. Chris Ofili is one of my contemporary favorites. And Jonas Wood. Or Jonah Woods. I forget where the S goes.
Okay, let's go ahead, have a little paint talk. Let's get a caller on the line. Okay, we're talking to Karen in Newcastle, UK. That's the United Kingdom.
Pip, pip, cheerio. I was hoping that perhaps you could give me a little advice about starting a painting. I seem to have trouble when I'm just staring down the blank canvas. I get so overwhelmed that I just have to leave the room and turn the canvas around and I have to walk out of the room. I can't even begin a painting.
You'll be okay, Karen. I hear what you're saying. And I want you to know that we're here for you. And we're going to get you started. What are you painting? Corgis?
I'm not even sure. I don't have even the beginnings of an idea. I just really want to be a painter. I spend very much money on all these fancy oil paints. And I really need to get started.
You need to wear gloves. Right, Kate?
I think that sometimes you just have to start right where you're at.
I think you need to pick a thing to paint or you have to decide what you're going to paint.
Just
you
grab it. It can be arbitrary.
Just like, grab one of your pieces of silver or crystal.
I was
going to
say piece of fruit. Silver's great. That won't rot.
Nope.
It sure won't.
It won't.
Could tarnish.
And just plop it in front of your face and... paint it.
Oh, but how do I even begin? I can't even fathom how I might even select a silverware item or food item.
What's your favorite tchotchke in your house?
I don't even know if I could select even a favorite of them. There's so many, but if you could maybe just tell me to count down the line of my Limoges boxes.
Pick the second Limoges box on the left.
That's the one of the kitten and the yarn ball.
Oh, perfect. That's going to be beautiful. Put it down next to your canvas and just
but
look at it.
On the right to the left?
What do you see?
I'm quite indecisive.
It should be on the right.
But I'm right-handed.
You really need us, don't you, Karen?
I do indeed.
Put it on the right and face that cute little kitten face right at you.
Have it set down now.
What color's the kitten?
It's a little calico cat.
Oh, do you have a black one or a white one?
Do you think that would be easier to paint?
I think it might give you a running head start.
Well, I think since I've gotten this far, which is farther than I've ever gotten before, I think I just need to run with it.
The calico? Okay.
That sounds really good, Karen. And, you know, this is sometimes the first steps are the hardest, but once you get over that first hurdle, you just start running and you never stop.
You'll have a whole room full of kitten boxes.
Painted ones, so paintings of kitten boxes. Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, it's quite all right.
Sounds like you kind of got it sorted out now. You think you can get a start on this?
I've already made my first brush strokes.
Oh, wonderful. I was smashing.
This is a real success story for us here on Paint Talk, subsidiary of Congratulations Pine Tree.
Solving painting problems for weeks.
Thank you so much, Karen. We really appreciate your call.
Thanks a lot, Karen.
Thank you for having me. Another tutorial day.
All right.
She was lovely.
Congratulations. You listened to another episode of Congratulations Pine Tree. Thank you for doing that. Let me know what you think about some of these new endeavors we started. Most of these things are things Mason wouldn't allow us to do. But if they're greatly successful and everyone will miss them, then you should let us know and maybe we'll continue. Yeah.
Will you, can we ask the listeners to write in with etiquette issues that they think should be observed?
Oh, yeah. What are your etiquettes?
Mine?
You know, there's a whole book about art world etiquette.
What is it called?
I think I have it with me. I'll let you borrow it. It's called I Like Your Work, Art and Etiquette.
Oh.
Yeah, and I'll let you borrow it. It's by Paper Monument. But people, if you have things, rules you wish were observed or problems you want us to solve that involve art etiquette, maybe you send them to us. We'll send it to Jenny and maybe you could be our correspondent.
Okay.
Do you think you're
I'm up for it.
You're the definitive voice on art and etiquette. Would you say so?
I would agree, of course, completely.
Is there anything else you want listeners to know?
No.
Have you enjoyed your time on Congratulations Pine Tree?
I have. I'm looking forward to Maysoon's return.
Bless her. But you were a fantastic David Bean Cooley.
Thank you.
Did you know that he spells his name not in any way you would ever guess?
Isn't it B-E-A-N?
No.
What is it?
I don't know, man. I can't even tell you. It's that obscure.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I had to look it up because I posted on Facebook the other day.
Is it?
I said you are our little Bean Cooley, our little David Bean Cooley.
Is it B-I-A-N?
It's like 100 letters. You would never guess. Some of them aren't even on the keyboard. What about that show you got coming up?
I'm curating a show at Southern Exposure opening September 11th. It's all about makeovers. So if you need a makeover or like to watch other people get makeovers.
Or if you like art.
That's about having a makeover.
You come on by. You come right on by. I recommend that show.
Thank you.
Haven't seen it. Don't know anything
about it.
Doesn't
exist yet.
But I will give it one gold star.
Wow, that's generous. Thanks.
Wait, it's not on a scale. It's like having a Michelin star.
Oh, right.
Like a chef.
Yeah, one is just a really big deal. Right?
Yeah. So thank you for listening. Oh, call in 419-351-6606. You can email us congratulationspinetree@gmail.com or you can tweet us at Pine Tree Podcast. And remember our website, congratulationspinetree.com.
Bye.